Today on the Unofficial Shopify Podcast, we're going to talk buying and selling businesses, you know, ideally Shopify stores in this case. Because in a recent episode, Drew Sinaki told us, hey, you know, the thing I wish I knew was buy a business if you can, because that's the shortcut as opposed to building a business. You know, there's years of figuring stuff out that you could just skip when you buy a business. And if you have built a business or acquired and scaled a business, certainly you think about, wow, what it would be like if you could get that big payday of selling a business. And so we've got someone with us today who's going to talk us through it, who's going to talk us through the ins and outs from his perspective, because we're joined by Gregory L. Frank from Empire Flippers, who has helped sell quite a few businesses, many of them Shopify stores, to date. I'm your host, Kurt Elster.
Check nasty.
And this is the Unofficial Shopify Podcast. Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. It's always a pleasure being on someone's podcast with a soundboard. I think it's the most fun thing. I wish more people did it. I should do it.
Oh, I totally, when I got this thing, it was like an entire year of me abusing it.
What?
It's just so much fun.
I couldn't stop it.
The disc jockey of the 1980s, you know?
But okay, focus. All right, so for people who aren't familiar with Empire Flippers, what is it?
Yeah, so my 30-second elevator pitch is we're the largest curated marketplace in the world when it comes to buying and selling online businesses. So we've sold affiliate sites, e-commerce stores, SaaS businesses, you name it, even weirder businesses like Kindle publishing businesses, which are more esoteric than those, I'd say. But yeah, I've been with the company for roughly 8 years, a little over 8 years now. And when I first started, our biggest business we ever sold was like $150,000. And that was like the big business, right? I remember my CEO telling me like it all changes at this valuation. And I think I told you offline, but about 2 months ago, we just sold a $13 million Shopify store. So times have changed.
So what's your background? How'd you get here? Where'd you come from? What led you to Empire Flippers?
Yeah. So I started my career in marketing, as many do, as an oil field roughneck up in Alaska. So I grew up in Alaska and I got into the oil field and worked there on many different rigs across many different oil fields. And I did not like it, was not a fan. So I taught myself internet marketing. I still remember being in my Halliburton Reds, which are really browns if you work in the oil field, because it's just always covered in mud. And I had all these Halliburton notebooks that they would give me. It's like one of the perks. They gave me free notebooks. And I had all these ideas of different ways of learning internet marketing, different funnels from the stuff I was learning from like YouTube and forums and courses and stuff like that. So I eventually got out of the oil field, obviously. I learned internet marketing. And originally I joined EF as just the guy who wrote the blogs. And now fast forward all this time, I'm the head of marketing.
That is quite the journey. How many years did that take?
To get out of the oil field?
Yeah, from when you left the oil field to now, how many years is that?
Oh, it's 8 years. Yeah. So EF was how I got out of the oil field. So fun story. I told this story to a guy and he told me I sounded like a softcore version of Goggins. I had no idea who Goggins was at the time. So I researched it and I was like, oh yeah, this guy's way more hardcore than me. But when I was working in the oil field, I had this like gritty determination where I just like, you know what, everything I've tried on the internet has failed. But one thing I am really good at is writing fast. And I know all the SEOs of the world absolutely hate creating content. And like I write poetry and books for fun. So like all my other internet marketing ventures had failed at that point. So I just went into all the Facebook groups I could find with SEOs and undercut every single writer. I was charging like half a cent a word. And that's how I really got my portfolio started in the internet marketing world. And I remember one of my clients, I was writing all these plumbing in Ohio articles for him. He's an SEO agency in Ohio, right? And he found I was still working in the oil field. I was like, yeah, man. Like after my 12, 13-hour shift, I go to the one part of the room in the camp where the Wi-Fi connection connects with the rest of the world from the Arctic. And I write your plumbing in Ohio articles. He's like, man, I'd be so burned out if I were you. Like, dude, I've been burned out for years. Doesn't mean you get to stop. You know, you still got to pay your bills. So that was how I started. And very funny, later on in my career in EF, I started meeting a lot of the gurus in the space. And they would have these sites or stores that they wanted to sell with me. And I knew the stores because I wrote all the content. So they had hired this content agency for themselves who had undercut themselves by farming it out to me. So I actually wrote all of these people's stores and content sites that eventually ended up selling their businesses, which I thought was quite funny.
Small world.
Yeah, it really is.
So in your experience, what are the stores that have sold well on Empire Flippers, of the Shopify businesses, are there commonalities there to the stores that tend to sell well?
There is. And what I'm going to say is going to sound like a lot of common sense because, I mean, to be honest, it is if you really start thinking about it from a buyer perspective. So this is really business model agnostic. So if anyone in your audience is not just Shopify, they're like consultant agency or whatever, this applies to them pretty much too. When it comes to selling a business, like, the key is how do you de-risk it? And how you de-risk it is by looking at what are the critical points of failure in this business. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, let's say I'm a Shopify store and 100% of my traffic is coming from Facebook ads, which is quite common with a lot of people in e-commerce. Like, all their ads are meta ads, right? Instagram and Facebook. So what happens if your Facebook ad account gets banned and you can never get it back? Like, well, you don't really have a business, or at least not for very long. So you want to diversify multiple traffic sources, right? And ideally, you want to diversify with multiple products where it's not just one product that you're selling. Now, you can get away with one product. I was just talking to a lady a few weeks ago. You know, she has like a $3, $4 million Shopify store with one product. And that's great, but I wouldn't recommend it because it makes everything a lot riskier. So she would be in a much better position if she was more than just organic traffic, which is what she's getting right now, by adding like TikTok ads, like TikTok Shop that is blowing up right now. Her own meta ads, and she would be much better off having multiple SKUs, and that also increases, you know, the average order value, right? So a lot of the stuff that we do as entrepreneurs to try to make our own businesses safer from our perspective is actually some of the good stuff that buyers also want, and they're willing to pay a premium for that.
So when someone's trying to get listed, they want to sell their business, they want to list it on Empire Flippers or, you know, for sale somewhere, what do you think are some of the challenges in getting prepped for that? What are the stumbling blocks?
So the biggest stumbling block, and this comes from a lot of experience, I've sold over 2,000 businesses at this point over the years, and the most common stumbling block is really the seller themselves. And what I mean by that is not like some, you know, personal development woo-woo type of stuff, but instead what I mean is sellers have what I call emotional equity. So most of the time, unless they've sold a business or bought a business in the past, this will be their first real exit. And usually that means this is their first real business, like, but went big and big enough where they can sell it, right? And so the seller overvalues their business because they have all this emotional baggage with it. Like, this is what allowed me to quit my job, travel the world, spend time with my kids, you know, do a pretty crazy life in comparison to most like 9-to-5 people, right? So they overvalue their business. And when they come to, if they don't use me, if they just go directly to the market and go to a buyer, often they get like extremely mad or upset. Like, I can't believe this buyer offered me such a lowball deal. But what they don't realize is that buyers valuing their business on a much colder arithmetic because they don't have that emotional equity, right? Like, your P&L is the P&L. Like, that's what it is to them at the end of the day. And now there's arguments for audience building and, you know, integration, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, they just don't have that same emotional equity. So if a seller comes to me, that's one of the first things I talk to them through to make sure they have realistic expectations of what they're worth. And once, if they can get over that, then I can help them become a millionaire, right? That's the good side. Once you like come down to reality, like, well, yeah, you're not worth $7 million, but you can still get $5 million, which is quite a lot, right? So valuations is the first big stumbling block, is finding out what you're worth.
And so, all right, walk me through then this process of getting a store listed for sale with you.
Sure. So if someone wanted to sell with us, the process is pretty streamlined. So what you do, you just go submit your store for sale with us. You go to, you know, empireflippers.com, right? And you'd submit it for vetting. And at that point, you sign nothing with us. What our team will do is go through your entire books. We'll rebuild your P&L because that's another stumbling block a lot of e-commerce entrepreneurs have, as you might imagine. I think we actually talked about that offline a bit, but P&Ls is often a struggle. Entrepreneurs tend to be creative and all over the place and thus not the best bean counters. So we do that for you and make sure everything is in the right format, present the business, give you the valuation. And if you like the valuation, if you like what you see, great. That's when you come onto our marketplace. We only have 2 months of exclusivity. So if we don't sell it within 2 months, you're, you know, more than welcome to take it off and try it somewhere else. But in most cases, like if you have a good business, if you're not sold by the end of 2 months, then you're having like really good conversations by the end of 2 months, in my experience. So from there, or once you're on the marketplace and my team markets to our whole list, right, and to all our channels, our sales team will come in to help you negotiate with a buyer. And that's like a big part of our thing is we try to make up like win-win-wins, right? We want the seller to walk away with life-changing money, but we still want the buyer to walk away getting a good deal where they didn't like just give the guy life-changing money and they win a massive amount of debt, right? We don't want that. And which ultimately lets us win because both sides win. And our sellers often become our buyers once they get that liquidity and once they get paid out. So it's very common for, say, let's say you sold a $2 million store with me to take $1 million and buy one or two stores from me to grow your own asset flywheel, which is what I call the strategy after watching a lot of my customers do it over the years. You basically just build up a business, sell it, buy a couple more from me, build those up, sell it, and keep the process going, right? But yeah, so that's kind of our goal. We want everyone to walk away feeling like, I am so glad I did that deal on both sides of the table.
All right, I want to hear more about, you know, what people do after they sell, and as well as like, you know, what the experience is like for people who buy. But I think first we got to talk about valuation. That's probably the thing people are curious about. You know, what factors are critical in the valuation and then what are typical multiples?
Yeah. So this is, I always stumble on converting it in my head from annual or from monthly to annual, because like EF, we do monthly multiples. It's kind of like a legacy thing. So if I say something like 36x, I'm really meaning 3x. So just for your audience out there, know that's only for 36 annually. It comes from our way back in the day when we used to sell like 3-month-old websites, you know, where you couldn't value them by a whole annual EBITDA. So now it's funny in the industry when anyone says 36x, like, they were raised on the EF content because no one else does this but me. But yeah, so in terms of valuations, it's really like there's two things that a seller needs to know. One, your business is ultimately worth what anyone's willing to pay for. So like all valuations are guessworks at the end of the day, even more so than say like real estate comparables, because every business is quite unique. So keep that in mind. Like if you are selling to a buyer that is another entrepreneur like you, then they're going to be a lot more pragmatic typically in how they value your business. If you're selling to someone who I say has a swimming pool for a P&L, like say a multinational public company, then your little $1 million business might not even be a blip on their radar. We're like, yeah, sure, whatever, right? Like stuff like that happens. So keep that in mind for the sellers out there. But when it comes to your valuation, the biggest thing that we look for is your SDE, your EBITDA. Like I'm sure you've been around this crowd as well, with you being so entrenched in the industry. But you know, I've been around a lot of Shopify store owners where they'll be like, "Oh yeah, you know, I'm making like $2 million in rev." Like they're like, you know, acting like they're really big stuff. But then you find out that their net profit, like they're barely breaking even. Like they can barely pay themselves their own salary because they've just said their whole unit economics are messed up, right? So that's not a good sign if you're a seller. You need to have a good unit economics, right? So all valuations, at least in our area in SMBs, are going to be valued on that SDE and EBITDA. Like what is your actual net profit after all is said and done? And we look at your 12-month average as your kind of like your baseline for that. And then we also look year over year. Like, are you growing? Are you stagnating? Are you declining? You can sell a business in all three scenarios, but your multiple is going to be drastically different in all three scenarios. Speaking of stumbling blocks, this is another issue that people get into. Like, let's say you have a Shopify store that's growing rapidly year over year, and you want to sell the business. Like, that's your goal. But you keep saying, and this is a very common line I hear a lot of entrepreneurs say at every conference I go to, that you will hear the entrepreneurs say, like, well, there's more juice for me to squeeze before I sell the business. But this is a massive mistake in my view, because if you're growing very, very fast, that is the best time you'll ever have to sell your business. If you reach a peak, like that you reach the top of that growth, really what that peak represents, if you can't keep growing, is the period of stagnation, where your business has now grown to a certain point where you got to start pivoting and reworking everything so you can get to that next peak of growth, right? Because your business is just reaching one of those natural bridges in its growth cycle. So if you sold the business on the way up, not only would you be, it'd be way easier for you to sell the business, but you're going to get a better multiple too. Because buyers, they on one end, they want to buy something that is less risky. But on the other end, they want to buy growth. So if they see something that's growing, they're like, oh, I better do this now because I want the growth that this trend line is pointing out, right? So that is another thing we look at. So those are the two big things, is like your profit and what scenario are you in, broadly speaking, your growth, stagnation, or
This episode is sponsored in part by Cleverific. Imagine freeing up hours of support time every week because your customers can manage their own order adjustments. That's what Cleverific makes possible. Cleverific gives customers the flexibility to add items, change shipping details, or even cancel their orders, all through a straightforward customer portal. And what it gives you is the peace of mind knowing your order process is smoother, your team is more efficient, and your customers are happier. Peter Manning New York, a prominent retailer, cut their order support queries by a staggering 99% after integrating Cleverific. And they're not alone. Remember, Cleverific not only reduces the number of support tickets, but also speeds up order processing and minimizes errors. Your customers handle their own simple changes, freeing up your team to focus on what really matters, growing your business. Sign up today at cleverific.com/unofficial and enjoy 50% off their pro plan when you use code unofficial50. It's just $49 a month for full access to every feature. Take action now with Cleverific to slash your customer support tickets, speed up order processing, and reduce returns. That's cleverific.com/unofficial. And then if someone's buying it, are those the metrics they're going to focus on?
Yeah,
like those year are over year pretty, change.
Pretty big ones for their multiples. So there's a bunch of other stuff that goes into it too, but these are the broad strokes. Like if you fix your profit and you fix your growth, most of the other stuff that affect your multiple, is you're probably also doing it right. So like other stuff that affects your multiple, what I talked about earlier, product diversity, revenue diversity, right? Not everything is one product. Like if your hero product makes up like 50% of your store, hey, that's fine. But if it's making up like 80% of your store and say you have like 30 SKUs, that's a lot less fine because that's a lot of sitting inventory probably, right? A lot of dead inventory happening. Same with traffic channels. If you want to have a diversity of channels, I recommend two. Most entrepreneurs I see struggle to even do two. Like most businesses we sell are one channel, to be honest. So like, I'm not saying you can't sell a business like that. But if you want to have the best multiple, have 2 to 3 pretty profitable built out acquisition channels as well.
So I want diversity in my catalog. I want to be showing year over year growth, and I want multiple acquisition channels, multiple traffic channels. It can't just be like only or Google, only Facebook.
Yeah. I'd also, just real quick, I'm sure I'm going to bring it up again, but I also highly, highly recommend for everyone listening to this to really focus on your email list. That is some of the most valuable, like the most valuable asset. Like if you only focus on one thing, like if you want to add a second, marketing channel, acquisition channel, make it email, because email does a lot of different things for your multiple. It's traffic, it helps your conversions, and you can use that data to bring in other traffic through, lookalikes or just understanding the psychographics and demographics of your audience better, right? So email is like also a big, big, big cornerstone. It's great for launching products or even launching new marketing channels like your own YouTube channel or whatever if you have good engagement on social, right? So email is also what I consider a key pillar for your evaluation.
All right, so that's 4 things I got to. Because my question is going to be, what are the top 3 things if I want to maximize that selling price?
Email kind of fits like all of them because it's like it does so many different things for you. So I always like to pull it out separately a little bit.
Okay. And a lot of this is like just generally good business advice in addition to being...
That's what I mean. A lot of it's common sense.
Not long ago, we were in a position where we were discussing an acquisition. And in going through that process and that preparation, ended up falling in love with my business all over again. Do you see this where people like, they're like, all right, I thought I was going to sell it. Yeah, now that somebody's interested, it's mine, I want it.
There's this common joke that a M&A deal dies 3 times before you actually get it done. So it's either the buyer or the seller that's going to kill it on that first time. And then they kind of kill it together on the second time. And then maybe the original buyer who had died on the first time, he comes around and then the seller's like, no more. So this is like quite common. Because one of the most interesting things, I think, is as an entrepreneur, like you're in your business all day long, right? And there's a certain bit of myopic, like tunnel vision that happens to you where you don't see all the great things that your business has anymore because you're too busy in the weeds fixing all the holes in the ship, right? By trying to make it run better. So when a buyer comes in and they're a little bit more glassy-eyed, if they really like what they're seeing, that can really inspire you to go forth and rebuild your business. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with pulling out a deal like that. Like, I think selling a business is a very personal decision as well as an economic decision. It's one of the biggest personal and biggest economic decisions you'll make in your career as an entrepreneur, in my view. So, like, I'm not saying that, like, that's a wrong thing to do, but I would recommend, like, you really do some soul searching before you decide to go sell your business, because it's not necessarily an easy process, and it's a small world out there. But, you know, you want to keep buyers happy, because a lot of times buyers and sellers end up becoming business partners after the deal too.
So tell me about how the purchase is structured. Like, often you can have an earnout deal where you're really, it's like, oh, I got this multiple million offer, but it's really paid out over like 3 years.
Yep.
What are these, what are terms of a typical sale like?
So it depends on the size of the deal. So if you're a very small e-commerce store, say underneath 500K valuation, you could expect majority of that all cash or completely all cash up front. Now, where the deals become trickier is when you get, I'd say the hardest area to sell an e-commerce business is 500,000 to a million in terms of your valuation, because it's just slightly too big for a lot of the like upstart entrepreneurs to just like go lay down that kind of capital, unless they have other businesses already kind of firing off. And it's too small for a lot of what I call the financial wizards, which are the private equity and the strategics, to come and look at you. So most real deal structuring happens above the seven-figure range. And if you are like, say, low seven figures, your deal structure will probably be pretty simple. Like, you can expect 80% upfront, 20% paid out, usually over a two-year period. It depends on how they pay it out, but usually it's going to be like quarterly payments. So or sometimes there's not even an earnout, it's just seller finance. So those two things sometimes get confused. So seller finance is usually you're giving the loan to them at either 0% interest or very low interest, and they're going to pay you no matter what happens with the business, right? Earnout, on the other hand, like, the business must grow at a certain pace in order for you to get paid out. Now, most of the time, earnouts are very reasonable. So most of the earnouts I have seen have gotten paid. But my advice to any seller, whether you use me or, you know, go off on your own or someone else, like, if you get an earnout deal, make sure the upfront amount is what you're happy with. Like, you should walk away with that money and like, I am so glad I did that deal, even if this other stuff doesn't come through. Now, the other stuff probably will come through, like it usually does, but you'd never want to do a deal where you're unhappy with that upfront amount, because you never know. There's no guarantees in business, right? I've seen a guy, he bought a $3 million business for me. And now in this case, the seller, or I think it was a $2 million business, the seller was pretty happy because he got his whole payment. But then the buyer, for whatever reason, like, just put the website under construction, and the website never got out of under construction. It's been under construction for like 5 years. Like, who knows? Like, what happened? Who knows? The seller got out fine, but when, if that was an earnout, probably wouldn't have been so fine, right? So you never know what you're going to get. Now, I say, like, I want to preface that, because sellers might hear that, like, I'll never accept an earnout. And I was just talking to a guy, he had a $5 million business, and he was telling me that. I was like, okay, well, you'll never sell your business then. Like, which is better, zero or $3.5 million right now? Like, with the potential to make it another $1.5 million over 2 years, right? Like, because if you do no earnout, then you also get no money. You have no liquidity. So the choice is kind of yours. You got to remain flexible but stern, is what I always tell my sellers.
I do like that advice of, like, be happy with that first earnout amount. Because that was the advice I got too, was like, hey, often those earnouts don't come to fruition, you know, because you don't know what's going to happen. And so you better be able to rely on that initial payment. Are there any other red flag sellers should look out for to ensure a smooth ride?
Sure. So on earnouts in particular, this happens once you get above like low seven figures, say you're like a $3-5 million plus kind of business, or like that $13 million one we sold, right? That's when structures start getting more complicated. And we personally had saved a seller. He like really fought us on this, and like makes sense why he would fight us on this. But we had this deal, I think it was a $2.8 million deal, and he got this earnout, and the earnout looked really, really good. So one of the things about earnouts is if you hit the hurdle, like that they set for you, you can make more money than what your business is actually worth. So in his case, $2.8 million, he would really make like $3.5 if it hits all of the earnout targets. Great, right? But the thing is, he was dealing with very savvy like private equity types, and these guys have an unfair advantage on sellers. Whereas the seller is selling their first business ever, that private equity guy, like, you're just like the business of the week for them, right? Like, they do this all the time. So they're just a lot more skilled than you, which is why I always, you know, shameless plug, I would use a broker to, if you'd never sold a business, just to watch out for these traps. But we realized that earnout, like, the growth rate was so extreme. Like, this business, no way is it going to make it, right? And so we told him, like, don't accept the deal. And gladly, he didn't. And we were able to restructure the deal. So that's one thing to watch out for on these structures is, what is the wording? What percentages are we talking about? When is the payout? All that kind of stuff. And if you're not using a broker, I highly, highly recommend that you use a lawyer that's familiar with M&A transactions so they can, like, dispel the myth of, like, what is actually being said in the contract and break it down to you in layman terms.
And okay, I want to, we've been talking, you know, almost entirely about if you are selling your business. I want to switch gears to advice for buyers. Similarly, what advice would you give a Shopify merchant, someone who has experience looking to buy, they want to expand, they got some cash on hand, and they're looking to buy another Shopify store that, like, I'm going to apply my learnings, I'll scale this one too.
Sure. Yeah. So what you said earlier, I 100% agree. I think buying a business is so much faster than building one, and so much, in a lot of ways, safer if you buy big enough. So I'm a big fan of buying. In terms of things to think about as a buyer, so you think you would have all the power because you have the money, but M&A is actually the other way around. The seller of the high quality business is the darling at the ball. All the buyers want the good quality business. They're all going to come competing. This is a big reason why big buyers don't like using brokers, because we do create a marketplace of competition, right? So, like, they know that they're going to have to pay a fair market wage or above fair market for that business, right? Because of the competition. So as a buyer, you got to remember you are the salesman in the deal. Like, you need to sell the seller on selling to you, like, because money is just a commodity. Everyone has money, and more people have more money than you, no matter how much money you have, because, like, we've dealt with private equity that have holdings in the billions, right? Like, very few people have that kind of dry powder sitting around, right? So knowing that, you need to win the seller over. And how you win the seller over is find out what they want. Like, if you talk to a seller, like, why are you selling the business? Like, oh, I have another project. Okay, but why are you really selling the business? Like, oh, I'm just, like, you know, emotionally burnt out. I can't get it out of my head, even though I'm, like, automated this business, like, where it takes 5 hours a week on my part, but I'm always thinking about it constantly. I want to think about this. Like, great. Well, what do you need to stop thinking about it? And you get, like, you drill down. It's the why. Like, find out the real reason why they are selling and structure your offer to meet that why. Like, okay, this is my minimum I need to meet in order to get the seller to say yes to me, right? So, like, that's how you start structuring your offer. Now, when you come out with your offer, you don't want to go to the max of what you're willing to pay. You still want to try to get a good deal, but you want to bring, like the buyers instead of just buy as low as possible, right? But at the same time, you need to meet what the seller wants. So you can give that deal and see what the seller says. You'll probably go back to the counter offer, which is very, very common. Usually I see between 3 to 7 rounds of counter offers, or just going back and forth, like, no, I want this. No, I want that. Okay, this. Okay, all right. There's the compromise, right? So that's a big thing. When you are negotiating, I always tell this to sellers too, but it's even more important for a buyer, because buyers are the salesmen in this case. You need to approach all negotiations as a collaboration, not a showdown. This is not like an old cowboy movie, who can draw the pistols the quickest, right, to get the best deal. Like, your goal is to give the seller what they want in such a way where you can get what you want. That's often done in deal structuring, which is a big reason why it's so common above 7 figures. Because if you think about it from a buyer perspective, like, if they paid that guy like $5 million all up front, they're basically just buying the honor of losing $5 million if it all goes wrong, right? So like, that's a big part of why they do these kind of structures. And if you want to be a master buyer, I'm really good at negotiations, really good at giving the seller what they want, and understanding all the different types of deal structures that can facilitate what the seller wants, right? Like, for example, we had a guy, he bought a business from us, and the seller's price was just unreachable by the buyer, not by a lot, by a little bit. And so what the buyer did, he noticed, like, okay, well, you have all this dead inventory. So if I give you this money, like, you know, he was thinking inside, if I give him this money, I can liquidate this section of his inventory And then I forget the second thing he did with the inventory, but basically made up more or less the difference. And he made a deal with the seller. Like, look, I'm not going to pay for the inventory up front. I'm just going to pay for it as we sell it. So like that was his other thing. So that way he didn't have to lay out all the capital. And so I was like, well, that's reasonable, you know? So you're always looking for ways to compromise. So as a buyer, you know tons of different ways to get a deal done. That also means you know tons of different ways to get the seller what they want. So you...
The Unofficial Shopify Podcast is sponsored in part by Zipify. And they've got the ugly truth about direct-to-consumer sales to share with you. And spoiler, it's really ugly. 82% of the people who buy from your store once will never buy from you again, and there's nothing you could do to win them back. That's why you need to get as much revenue as you can from each order. And that's where OneClick Upsell comes in. OneClick Upsell is a Shopify app that offers your customer upsells and cross-sells with every purchase, and it can increase your average order value by 15%. With OneClick Upsell, you can add AI-powered upsell funnels to every product on your store in just 3 clicks, including your product pages, shopping cart, checkout, thank you page, and even on the shop app, so you earn extra revenue automatically. OneClick Upsell is already the number one choice for 15,000 Shopify stores, and guess what? It's made merchants like you an extra $750 million. So don't miss out on another dollar in free upsell revenue. Try OneClick Upsell today and start making 10 to 15% more from every customer today. Go to zipify.com/Kurt to start your 30-day free trial. That's zipify.com/KURT. I think that's the interesting thing that people don't realize about buying and selling a business. Like, it is not just a single transaction. It's often, you know, a much more complicated thing that happens in a series of transactions after quite a bit of back and forth. Any other tips on if I'm buying, how do I ensure I'm going to get a profitable and worthwhile purchase here? So, you know, the others you said, like, well, on the selling side, you're like, well, here's the red flags to watch out for. All right, if I'm buying, what are my red flags?
So your red flags as a buyer is if a business is growing too fast and too short of a timeline. Like, growth is great, but the biggest killer of businesses in a lot of ways isn't so much not making money, but having too much revenue and not profit, right? So you're growing so quickly in this short time span, that could be a fad, right? This is another reason why having diverse products is good. Another red flag is buying too small. And this isn't necessarily a red flag. It's just a cautionary thing you should consider as a buyer. So if you're looking at buying a business that's lower than, say, $500,000, this can still be a really, really good business. It could be great, but it's a very fragile business because it's very small. So if a storm happens to it, it will be harder for it to kind of like pivot through the hurricane versus like the big cargo ships of the industry, right? So that's another thing to consider is size. One thing is if anything is wrong with the P&L, the profit and loss statement, if something is wrong here, and this is why I tell sellers to get a bookkeeper who understands e-commerce or use us, whichever way you prefer. But if something is wrong with your P&L or the P&L of the business you're looking at rather, then this is a giant red flag. Like, this should be the most important document in the entire business. Like profit and loss statement, the cash statement, all the different financial statements, right? If something's wrong here, and they're trying to sell the business, which so there should be even more incentive for it to be correct. Like, you need to double check everything. So how you do this is you make sure, if you're not using a broker, how you do this is you want proof of earnings. And now the proof of earnings report is pretty expensive. So again, if you're buying a smaller business, it's often not even worth to get a proof of earnings statement. So other ways you can do it is actually looking at their bank statements and making sure that the money that they are saying that's coming in is actually coming in on their bank statements. So that's another way, looking at their actual taxes, which is often not very helpful because a lot of entrepreneurs do a bunch of different stuff and minimize their taxes, which leads to SBA often not being as good of a vehicle as people think. Because if you try to buy a business with an SBA and the entrepreneur is like a cunning tax minimizer, the SBA loan is not going to work out unless they reconciliate their taxes, which is a whole other issue. But those are some of the big red flags. So anything that the seller tells you, even like if you get the best impression of the seller, and most of the time the seller is not being nefarious, even if there is a mistake in their P&L, it's just so many different things going on. It's easy to miss something, right? So the seller is most likely not trying to pull a fast one on over you, but they might not even realize that they did pull one over you because they think the business is doing this too, and then they're proven wrong, which is something that's happened to us. So like we'd get a lot of these Amazon FBA businesses come to our marketplace, and they would go through our vetting process, and they realize, oh shit, I'm not making nearly as much money as I thought I was, because they weren't as clued into their books as they thought they were until we started looking at it, right? So those are some quick red flags to consider.
Okay. You're in an interesting position where you see a lot of these sales happen. And so you're kind of privy to market trends. So what trends are you seeing currently in regards to selling Shopify stores?
Yeah. So this is interesting. So we led the trend on the FBA aggregators, right? Like, I often joke that the Amazon FBA aggregators were like our stepchildren, because we were the very first broker to sell FBA businesses before Amazon even knew you could. Like, we used to have to call up Amazon and tell them, like, no, you legally cannot stop this entrepreneur from selling their business. And like, oh, right.
Well, they tried to stop you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So what was happening was they have that policy against selling FBA accounts. And what their language there, what the context of that is like fraudsters who are doing like a bunch of black hat shit on Amazon where like they need to go buy a new account because they keep burning through theirs, right? And that's what they really meant about not selling it. But the low-level customer service, they didn't have no idea about what we were talking about. So we had to go up the chain, get these written letters of approval before we even started the transfer process with FBA. We pioneered the listing transfer. We pioneered the account takeovers. Like, it got to a point where like I came so close to getting a guest post written on Amazon's blog because I had worked so closely with them at this point, which was really, really cool. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. That would have been a great backlink for SEO. But yeah, so in terms of answer your question, yes, so I've seen a lot of this stuff. And a lot of the hype, the hunger for businesses has moved away from FBA, and with good reason. Because what I mentioned earlier, the risk, right? Like with Amazon, you have a massive platform risk, right? Great businesses, but a lot of those businesses, they only sell on Amazon. They only have one marketing channel. So if something happened to the marketing channel to Amazon, they could be screwed. So what I'm seeing now is buyers are extremely hungry for high quality DTC businesses. Because the secret is, like, all those aggregators, they bought the FBA businesses thinking that they could build a direct-to-consumer brand using those products by taking it off of Amazon. But it doesn't really work that way. It works the other way around. Like, if you build a successful direct-consumer Shopify store, it's much easier for you to be successful on Amazon with that same product than it is the other way around. And you've already figured out the hardest part, which is those direct funnels. That's the thing that Amazon FBA people just don't know how to do as well, because they have the spoils of Amazon's traffic, but they also have the chains of Amazon, right? So that's the big thing I'm seeing is high quality Shopify DTC brands with good funnels, good traffic. And a lot of these buyers, what they want to do is they want to come in and acquire that and then use their connections with, say, like retail distribution to open up a bunch of other channels as well, in addition to just, you know, natural scaling through economies of scale. So that's kind of like that and marketing agencies are like the two things I get asked about the most right now.
What's the question about marketing agencies?
Oh, same thing. Buyers love them. So it's funny. Marketing agencies are kind of in a place that affiliate sites were back in 2016, where no one thought you could sell on an affiliate site. And, you know, we've sold hundreds of them. And now a lot of my agency owner friends, like I just gave a speech here in my hometown at the Saigon SEO Summit, where I was talking to my affiliate friends to become my e-commerce friends. And a buddy sent me a message on LinkedIn like, I'm too late to build out an affiliate site with all this stuff that's going on with Google search. And now I see this e-commerce slide, like I'm too busy with my agency. I'll never be able to sell a business. So I'm like, dude, just sell your agency. Like, agencies are great. We've sold many, many of them. So a lot of agency owners have no idea they can even sell, it seems. So that would be my next, like, bringing the good word to them.
I assume because it's, you know, it's a service business. That's the thing. They're like, oh, you can't sell that. And of course you can.
Yeah, the issue is like too founder dependent, not a big enough team. So team is really important with agencies. You got to be at a certain size to make it worth it too. Like less than $700,000 is very hard to sell an agency. You want productized services, not customized. You want the opposite of customized. So you can sell your services almost like an e-commerce store would in that similar style. And an acquisition channel, ideally, that doesn't rely on the founder. And fulfillment, that doesn't rely on the founder. You do all that. You have a big enough redundancy in your employee pool. Very sellable business.
So, okay. Talking about e-commerce, do you have any future predictions? You've been doing this a long time. Where do you see e-commerce heading or Shopify or this market? look in your crystal ball, make a prediction.
It's been a rough last like 4 years to make a prediction. I feel like there's been four black swan events since we started doing more podcasts. So let's see what Greg could come off the magical elf, what predictions I got. So in all seriousness, I think e-commerce store owners are in, like, so the agency owners that have it figured out and e-commerce store owners that have it figured out, I think are the most sustainable and scalable and sellable business probably for the next foreseeable few years, like probably 3 to 5 years, they'll be the most sellable businesses, even more so than SaaS in my view. And the reason why I say that is because AI is destroying everyone. Like it's coming for everything, right? So like my affiliate site friends, like a big part of why they're feeling so much pain is because of AI, because like it's destroyed the Google algorithm as Google's like panicking to catch up with OpenAI. Was just chaos and blood on the streets if you're an affiliate site owner. And when it comes to SaaS, the same pain that my affiliate friends are feeling, I think they're going to feel that pain too, probably towards the end of next year when a lot of the informational queries from SEO start disappearing or becoming more threatened by AI. And because AI is just going to start creating SaaS businesses out of thin air now. Like they don't need a coder. Like the thing that was your moat that you needed all this VC money, now a guy just like sitting in his room can make it an afternoon using ChatGPT or Devin, right? So in terms of sustainability, I think e-commerce and agencies are in a very luxurious position because when a new AI tool comes out, the e-commerce entrepreneur, all they have to do is like, hey, call up their customer support. How do I import all my data over to that new tool? The best and brightest tool, right? So e-commerce stores and agency owners get to use like all the best tools that are going to be coming out of here. Versus the other business models, I think they're going to have a harder time with it.
Well, I hope you're right. You're right. AI moves so quickly, and there's just a lot of anxiety about it. And I viewed it as like, hey, it's another tool. So you know, stay on top of your tools, and then you could take advantage of that. Like, why do you have to be the one who gets punished by it? You could be the one that takes advantage of it.
Man, I have friends. So we had this meeting with the other higher ups over at EF. Like, why aren't we focusing on marketing on AI? And like, look, I'll sell an AI business. It's like the easiest one to sell right now. It's so hyped up. Like, we got a $2 million one in vetting right now. But I don't want to build any marketing around it because it's just not sustainable. Like, I have a friend last year who built a chatbot company on AI and on OpenAI's API, right? Built one man show, $25,000, like basically pure profit. I think he's spending like maybe $500 as expenses, like next to nothing, right? And then OpenAI came out with their custom GPTs and chatbots, started his business overnight. Like, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to compete against this multi-billion-dollar behemoth?
It's going to, yeah. I mean, something moves that quickly, it could cannibalize its past successes, it sounds like.
If the best tool last year was ChatGPT, but now it's, Claude or Perplexity or whatever for the thing that you want to do. As an e-commerce entrepreneur, you can be agnostic. You can just switch the label to whenever the other one is better. Like, that's one of the great things about e-commerce and being an agency owner. You're not, or agency owner depends. Like, my friend, he got screwed, right? But if you're agnostic with the stuff, like, you can just keep using the best of the best and not have to worry about this extremely brutal red ocean that the SaaS and AI people are going to be dealing with in the coming months and years. So that's what I mean by e-commerce. I'm pretty bullish on e-commerce overall.
All right, before I ask you some personal questions, I saw that there's an Empire Flippers app, for a Shopify app. Tell me about
this. Yeah. So I'm pretty excited by this. It's something I've wanted to do for literal years. So we finally got it done. It's a Shopify app. You can go to the Shopify store. If you just search like Empire Flippers evaluation tool, it should come up. And basically what it does, it sits inside of your Shopify dashboard and you can enter in your profit margins and a couple other numbers. Then it's pulling in your real revenue numbers combined with our valuation tool API. And it gives you a rolling rough estimation of what your business is worth every single day. So it's updating constantly as you grow. Yeah. And like, as I said earlier in the show, like valuations is like one of the hardest things for sellers to overcome and really understand, right? So here you have a free valuation and it's based off 2,000 businesses we've sold.
At the start of the show, you said you were doing this SEO writing business and you were burned out on it. But you're like, what choice do I have? You just keep going. Do you experience burnout now or are you happy with what you do?
It's a tough one to answer, man. I think the last couple years has been tough because the M&A market's been tough, to be honest. Like, you know, we saw the billion-dollar aggregators crash and burn, which had a massive ripple effect across everything. I'm saying I'm too busy right now, which isn't great. I just hired a guy to help me. I'm probably going to hire another guy soonish to help me further. But in general, man, like, I used to work 18 hours a day across North Dakota, Alaska, Gulf of Mexico. Like, the guy I replaced, so when I was 18, when I got on an oil rig, how I got that job was the guy who I was taking over lost the lower half of his body in auger. Like, oh, he wasn't that much older than me. He's like 2 years older than me. In North Dakota, I was on the rig where this happened, but the driller, he was high on acid and ran this guy through with a 5,000-pound top drive, which is the giant thing that holds up the drill pipe, right? I almost lost this finger in the oil field saving this newbie guy from almost getting his hand completely chopped off by a piston pump. So, like, when I think about the oil field versus what I think about today, like, yeah, I'm busy. Like, it's tough, but it's fun tough. Like, versus that is, like, this is nightmare tough. Like, this is scary shit. So, like, my dad is an entrepreneur and my dad is my hero. So I kind of feel like I'm helping versions of him, like, get, like, really level up their own life. Because the moment you exit your business, I joke, it's the start of your real business. Like, if you suddenly have been spending, you know, you've been spending years working on this thing, and you, it's not like just because your business is $5 million, like, you're a millionaire. Like, you're putting all this money back into the business, right? Though he had this buyer, he always joke, I love all these e-commerce entrepreneurs. They're all young and really rich and broke as hell because they're just reinvesting constantly, right? So when you get to sell that $5 million business, you are a millionaire now. Your life changes. Like, you have whole new questions that weren't even possibilities as questions just moments before that. And I think that is just a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. So I love it.
I'm so glad I asked that question. All right, where can we go to learn more about you and selling a Shopify business on Empire Flippers?
Yeah, so I have a niche site blog called empireflippers.com. Come check it out. So if you want to sell your site, we have valuation tools and sell your site, or you can register for our marketplace and check out businesses if you're more on the buy side. If you want to reach out to me personally, it's just greg@empireflippers.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn.
This has been informative and helpful and inspiring, and I am so glad you were able to join me today. Gregory L. Frank, empireflippers.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, man. It was a pleasure.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.